This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
On today's show, Rove matches your Mesa. We'll answer the question, should you buy IHG Diamond status? And we announce this year's picks for Bon Void of the Year.
Frequent Miler on the Air starts now.
Today's main event, the 2025 Bon Void Awards. Everybody has been looking forward to this show. In fact, an unbelievable number of loyalty programs and credit card issuers have submitted to become winners for this show by bonvoying us over and over throughout the year. And we even have some late-breaking entries to the list this year. So we'll get into all of that in today's main event.
Oh my goodness, so much going on this year. There are even honorable mentions. It's crazy. It's been a crazy year, but we'll get to that later on. Remember, if you want to jump ahead to something or you want to come back to it later on, you can always find the timestamps in the show notes. Just expand the description box, and wherever you're watching or listening, don't forget to like this video or give us a rating on the podcast wherever you're watching or listening. Leave your comments too. We always appreciate hearing from you. Let's drag out this week's giant mailbag.
This week's giant mail comes from Sean. So as background, the Amex Platinum cards offer $300 every 6 months of credit towards fine hotels and resorts and the hotel collection. And Sean's talking about trying to use his credit. Sean says, I've been trying to figure out a good use for my second half 2025 fine hotels and resorts, the hotel collection benefit, and it doesn't fit into my trips. It might fit into my parents' trips. I looked at the terms and conditions and found that companion platinum card members can book the hotel collection, not fine hotels and resorts, and the $300 credit can be applied. The companion platinum card is the fee-free one. I've seen a lot of discussion about changing names on reservations and workarounds. This seems like a much more in-the-rules, fee-free way to do it.
Really interesting. So the platinum card, if you have a platinum card, there are different types of authorized users, essentially, additional card holders that you can add. You can add somebody with platinum level benefits, and that's not cheap. It's what, $195 a year, I think, on most of the cards now to add an additional card holder. But there's also this companion platinum card that has no annual fee and doesn't carry the usual platinum card benefits. So it doesn't give you Centurion Lounge access, for instance, doesn't give you Delta Sky Club access, but apparently it does give you access to the hotel collection. That was news to me.
Yeah, news to me too. I mean, there are ways without giving someone an authorized user card that you can book stays for them. But this is a nice way that's, you know, as Sean said, it's clearly laid out in the terms and conditions that these companion card holders can book the hotel collection. And so that's just really nice to know. And you do need to, even if someone else booked you the stay, you have to check out with an American Express card at the hotel. And so this is a way to just cover all the bases at once. And I really like that. That's really good to know. You know, so sometimes there are little details to these programs that even we don't know about. And this is definitely one of those.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I want to mention, just to be totally clear, that it is a prepaid hotel credit. So you do have to prepay for the stay. We did have a report in Frequent Miler Insiders, I don't know, a couple of months ago from somebody who just didn't realize that. And so they had booked a postpaid one and then paid at the hotel expecting to get their statement credit. And of course they didn't get it. So make sure that you prepay, don't forget. But yeah, that is a great tip, a good one to know, and one that I'm sure will come up again in the future. And it'll be great to be able to offer that solution to people. So thank you for writing in with that one, Sean. Let's run some numbers. It's time for Mattress Running the Numbers.
It sure is. Today we're going to talk about an IHG promotion. IHG has a promotion called Lock In 2026 Diamond Status. It's a targeted promotion, which a number of people can buy points that during this promotion are elite qualifying. So normally when you buy points from IHG, they don't count towards elite status, which makes sense. But during the promotion, they will. And so it's possible to buy yourself diamond status. Now, Why would you consider buying diamond status from IHG? If you have a several IHG credit cards come with platinum status, that's the second top tier. So why would you go out of your way to buy diamond? Well, it has some decent benefits. It has free breakfast for two on your stays, and that seems to be really well honored across most properties. You get 100% bonus point bonus on your paid stays versus 60% with platinum. You get Hertz President Circle status, and you get a dedicated diamond support line, which I haven't used this much, but I have used it a couple times, and I got really good service. So I don't think you should discount that. That can be a valuable benefit as well.
Oh, that's interesting. It's great to know. So, all right. So, what's the deal? I mean, I know you can do it buying points. Points are usually half a cent each. Is that the case here? And how many points do you have to buy?
No, when you say they're usually half a cent, that's when they do a promotion,
On
right?
sale.
That's a sale
Correct.
to make it 0.5 cents each. No, they're not really on sale here, but cardholders always get a 20% discount on points. And so you can buy points through this deal for around 0.67 cents per point. So it's the normal price you'd get as a cardholder when there's no sale going on, but this time it includes qualifying points. So in order to get diamond status, you need 120,000 status qualifying points. That will cut if you're starting from zero, if you don't have any qualifying points already and you need to buy all 120,000, that'll cost you $800 during this deal. So I think there's several ways to think about like, is this worth pursuing? And I'm going to do it all from the point of view of someone starting from zero, because I think the closer you are to diamond status, the fewer points you would need to buy, and the more obvious it becomes that it would be a good deal to buy them. But starting from zero is where it's really questionable, I think, for a lot of people. So here's some different ways to think about it. Let's say you're actually planning an upcoming stay where you're going to pay cash, but if you had 120,000 points you could apply towards a stay, it would save you $800 or more. In that case, it's kind of like a no-brainer that you could actually buy the points and either save money or maybe come out even over what you would have paid anyway, and then you get diamond status for free. I don't know how common that kind of scenario would be, but it's just something to consider. Another thing to consider is that our reasonable redemption value for IHG points is the point at which you are likely to get that much value or more from your points is 0.61 cents per point. So that's a bit less than how much they're selling them for here. But with using that RRV of 0.61, you could say that 120,000 points are worth $732 of stays or more. And so paying $800 is like paying the net difference. 800 minus 732 is $68 to get diamond status. So from that point of view, I'd say it's pretty close to a no-brainer if you think you would be using diamond status benefits over the next year. However, that said, I'm not sure looking at the RRV is the best way to think about this. As Nick made clear at the outset, IHG so often has sales on points for half a cent each that I think it makes a lot more sense to think of points as being worth half a cent each. So 120,000 points, that's like $600 worth of points. And so the net difference, if you're paying $800 for these points, you could think of it as paying $200 extra to get diamond status, right? And that's a very logical, I think, good way to think about it. But it only works if you are willing to buy 120,000 points for half a cent each. If you would look at that and say, yeah, sure, when they're on sale, that's what it would cost, but I wouldn't be a buyer anyway, then it's not really right to say, oh, diamond status will only cost you $200. The right way to look at it in that situation is say, how much would you have been willing to buy 120,000 points for if there wasn't this diamond status promotion going on? So, for example, in my situation, I have a lot more IHG points right now than I have any immediate need for. So I'm not a buyer at half a cent each. Maybe if there was a sale that was like around 0.4 cents each, then even though I have a lot of IHG points, I'd say, well, that's a great deal. So I'm going to buy them. So if I use that 0.4, then the 120,000 points are worth $480. And if I pay $800 now, that would be like paying $320 for a year of diamond status. So as you can see, the value. You get the value you want to assign to the points you get, the redeemable points you get from this deal is going to vary. You shouldn't necessarily use my number. It's going to vary based on your situation. And so whether or not this is a great deal, I think it varies so much by your situation. So, again, in my case, I wouldn't pay $320 for diamond status. I might pay $200 for diamond status if I was pretty sure that I would have some stays in the next year where I would really benefit from the, free breakfast, for example.
Yeah, I think that it's so important the way you explained the how to value the points because, when I saw this, my first thought was, okay, 120,000 points. I can frequently buy those for half a cent each because they do put them on sale pretty often at that rate. So it, in my mind, it was $600 worth of points. But it's such an important point that Greg made at the end there that that's available to me several times a year and I haven't been buying them, right? So apparently it's not worth 600 to me to buy them because I haven't been buying them at that price. And so, that's I think that's really important to consider. Okay, well, how low would they have to go for me to be like, all right, I'm going to buy some IHG points here. And in my case, I'm actually really low on IHG points. I just at some point not too long ago used most of the rest of the IHG points I have. So there's part of me that looks at this and says, well, I always find it useful to have a stash in all the various programs. So maybe I'd be interested, but I think that Greg's perspective there is a really good way to look at it and say, okay, well, yeah, but that's been the case for a little bit, and I haven't jumped on buying 120,000 points, so I shouldn't probably value that at $600. So I probably won't do this one, but I could totally see this being useful though for somebody who's got a number of IHG stays coming up because you'll earn some more points on paid stays, and the free breakfast benefit could obviously pay for itself with a multi-night stay at a higher end IHG property. It could pay for itself pretty quickly. One or two stays of a few nights or more at a higher end property. So I could certainly see it being appealing. I probably won't buy it myself, mostly because I don't tend to use a lot of IHG point. I've been sitting on like, 80 or 90,000 for years and hadn't used them until just recently. So I don't think I'm going to probably do it, but I could see it being appealing for some folks.
Yeah, I totally agree. It just depends on your situation, and for a number of people, it'll be a great deal. Many people, it'll be a decent deal, and then for people like me or maybe Nick, it's probably not worth going for.
All right. Next up in today's show, let's talk about who Bonvoyed us this week. And we've got a late-breaking entry, I think, into the top 10.
We do. I mean, gosh, we thought the Mesa mess was a late-breaking entry when Mesa shut down everyone's credit cards last week. But Chase is just so determined to make it into our Bonvoid candidate list this year that they added another entry, which is that they took their The Edit, which is their answer to Amex's Fine Hotels and Resorts. Up until now, the Sapphire Reserve card was letting you book stays at 2 cents per point value. They call that a 2x points boost. And it was listed in all the documentation. That's you get that 2x boost for the Edit properties. They quietly edited some of the documentation a few weeks ago, and then over the weekend, or maybe on Monday morning, they actually changed the system to where now about half of the Edit properties are getting less than a 2x boost. We're currently seeing a 1.65x boost for that half of the properties, and they're not promising even that much. I mean, they're now just promising up to 2x. Some people have called them out on the fact that they still have documentation on their website that says 2x even. It doesn't say up to 2x. And so
they didn't edit it at all. They didn't. Edited some of it, but they didn't edit all of it.
Correct. They edited up to one website page, but not all of them. So they've decided to honor 2x boost through December 22nd. Really minor, I think. They're not admitting that they did anything wrong. They're saying, well, we always said up to 2x, but they didn't.
No. They edited that. That's they didn't say that in the beginning. Come on. I mean, it's no. this is I think just ridiculous and very disappointing to see that this didn't even last. Like, what, the new benefits went live for existing cardholders, what was it, October 26th? So not even 2 months, right? Like, yeah. Not even 2 months of getting the 2x points boost. Like, that's surprising. It doesn't necessarily surprise me that they've changed it or that it would change over time. It does surprise me that it didn't even make it 2 months before they've tried to be like, oh, we never intended them to be 2x. Of course you did. That's what it said. Anyway. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. I mean, good that they'll edit, or they'll honor it for a couple more days, maybe after this podcast publishes. Good-ish, but yeah, we'll talk more about that, ish, I guess, in the main event.
Right? I would heavily emphasize the ish on that one. It's better than nothing, good-ish. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So thanks for the late breaking entry, Chase. We'll come back to you. We're not done with you. Let's talk about awards, points, and more. Speaking of the Mesa mess, Rove has taken lemons and made some lemonade here. So Mesa, of course, had the Mesa Homeowners Card, which was a credit card where you could essentially earn points on having a mortgage. You didn't actually pay your mortgage with the card, but if you had a mortgage and the credit card and you spent money each month, you could earn points on mortgage and bonus points in a number of categories. And as we talked about on our most recent coffee break episode, they abruptly closed up shop last week and closed everybody's accounts. And so many people were stranded with rewards that they could no longer access and use. And what a shame that was. And we talked about how frustrating that is and surprising. Well, Rove Miles, the platform for booking hotels and flights online and earning transferable miles for those things, has come out with a smart piece of marketing here. Match your Mesa. So they're going to clean up the Mesa mess, at least to some extent for you. So if you had Mesa points, Rove is going to give you up to 5,000 free miles.
Yeah. And so Rove is another transferable points program, like Mesa was. And hopefully Rove will last a lot longer. But, you know, this is just a really smart marketing move by them, I think, to offer free miles to people caught up in this. It's a great way to get free publicity. And not free. It costs them the 5,000 miles. And they have some good transfer partners, too. So it's definitely worth going for this if you have any Mesa points, or if you have a screenshot of your Mesa balance before the mess happened, you should be able to apply for those 5,000 free miles.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about knowing your audience, because obviously I'm sure that Rove is aware that a lot of Mesa customers are probably aware of Rove, may or may not have been using it yet, but I mean, there's probably a lot of overlap there in terms of the people, because I think you have to be pretty in tune with the game to have been familiar with Mesa and with Rove. And so I think, you know, they could see that this was a group of customers they could tap into. Smart. I think that was good. Obviously the whole situation still stinks for Mesa cardholders. And I'm sure there are some folks out there who had far more than 5,000 miles, but might as well get your 5,000 free miles while you can. And like Greg said, hopefully they last a lot longer. All right, let's get into today's main event.
Main event time, the 2025 Bonvoid Awards. This is the moment everybody's been waiting for. First, let me back up
though, with bated breath. With bated breath.
What are the Bonvoid Awards? So it dates back to Marriott merging with SPG, and they renamed at that time the rewards program to Bonvoy. And what followed was a series of problems with the new combined program. I mean, serious problems where they would tell the press one thing about the program, and then their own customer support people knew something else, and all the customers were caught in the middle and basically getting what became the word Bonvoid. You got Bonvoid anytime something Marriott did something bad to you, and then that term spread to anytime a loyalty program, a credit card issuer, really any business does something very customer unfriendly, you've been Bonvoid. And so we've been the last few years doing our annual Bonvoid awards to look back at the year of what were the biggest most customer unfriendly changes that happened this past year.
Yes. Congratulations, Marriott. You maintain the name, if not the championship. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. So, in quick review, in 2024, both the People's Choice Award and our pick matched. It was Hyatt Breaks Our Hearts with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. That had 23% of the People's Choice vote, which was the largest vote getter among the People's Choice Awards with 268 votes. So, yeah, I mean, Hyatt broke our hearts last year by adding Mr. and Mrs. Smith and then, of course, not putting them in the award chart. And so we talked about that on last year's show. We won't rehash it here, but we will talk about the 2025 candidates to take the crown and the focus away from Hyatt.
So first of
Maybe.
all, I've alluded to this several times in the show that the Bonvoid Awards are clearly more popular than ever before. It seems like everybody wants this brilliant prize. This year, we've been Bonvoid by a seemingly boundless and bountiful bevy of bold contestants. In fact, there were far
Brilliant,
too many
brilliant.
candidates this year, so we had to make some really tough decisions to limit the candidate list to just 10.
Yeah, so we have some honorable mentions, some 2025 honorable mentions that we're not even going to talk about because they didn't even make the list. We'll mention them quickly here, and that's about it. So some honorable mentions probably would have been near the top of the list any other year, but didn't even crack the top 10 in 2025. Turkish finally ending the Hawaii sweet spot in 2025. That's now gone. So that didn't make it this year. The Venture X eliminating free guest and authorized user lounge access. Marriott dumping its partnership with Sonder on less than 24 hours notice, leaving people out in the cold with nowhere to stay. Those things didn't even crack the top 10. They do get an honorable mention for this year's Bonvoid Awards, but that begs the question, what did make the top 10 for the 2025 Frequent Miler Bonvoid Awards?
Yeah. Before I read the first one, I just have to mention that even the honorable mentions, where there were a bunch that of
All
additional ones
right.
that we left
Oh,
out of
yeah.
that list too. There were just so many entrants this year. It was really
So many.
tough. So if your favorite example of being Bonvoid is not on this list, don't blame us. Blame all the other businesses that have out Bonvoid, whoever Bonvoid you. Okay. So first up this year is Emirates. Emirates didn't limit their Bonvoying to just one specific thing. They had a collection of things that added up to a big Bonvoid moment. They restricted first class awards to elite members. They hiked surcharges on flights that connect to North America, and like their Fifth Freedom flights that used to be a good deal with points. And probably the most noticeable of all, they made some changes that led to all the transferable points programs either reducing the transfer ratio from 1 to 1 to something less than 1 to 1. I shouldn't have said all of them, but most of them. And at least in one case, like Chase, just dropped them all together. So we think that they basically are charging the programs a lot more for their points than they were before. So that's Emirates' candidacy.
Yeah, what a bummer there, because for years that was sort of such an aspirational reward redemption, right? To fly Emirates first class was kind of one of those flashy things that you probably saw people do on Instagram, maybe even us from time to time, because I've flown it a few times over the years, but and I know you have too. So it's unfortunate that they have restricted first class awards just to elite members, but more unfortunate yet was that hike in surcharges, because there was a good use, or decent use anyway, of Emirates miles flying in business class between New York and Milan, or Newark and Athens. But now, with the surcharges on top of the mileage cost, it's just not attractive at all. So, yeah, this is a bummer. And I have focused on those two things, but I think really the reduction in transfer ratio might be the worst news long term, because we talked recently on an episode about how that seems to have given some of these transferable currencies permission to do the same with other programs. And if that spreads, then even though that isn't the thing I'm most focused on right now, that will prove to be the biggest long-term effect of the Emirates
really good
changes
point.
Of 2025.
All right, what's up next?
All right, number two. Number two, Wyndham splits with Vacasa. Ah, broke my heart here. So Wyndham Rewards, of course, used to have a partnership with Vacasa Vacation Rentals, whereby you could book Vacasa rentals from 15,000 points per bedroom per night, depending on the cost. It was either 15K or 30K per bedroom per night. This is a partnership that changed over the years. It used to be 15K per bedroom everywhere, but you couldn't book some places, and then they made some more places accessible and whatnot. It doesn't really matter now because it's all over. You can't do it anymore. And that's a bummer because this was a really good value or decent value use of Wyndham points, particularly for people who prefer vacation rentals or travel to places where that's what the majority of options are. There were some places I had been eyeing for a while that I wished I could have planned a trip to, and unfortunately, they relatively abruptly ended that. They did give us some notice, but the notice was such that you could only book for stays ending at the latest, I think, the end of January, and that ended at the beginning of December. So it's over now. But yeah, that's a shame. I would love to see somebody partner with a vacation rental company again, not even because I love I don't generally love vacation rentals, but I thought that this was a great way to diversify and have something else additional for those times when that becomes valuable and useful. And a lot of people do love vacation rentals. So it's a shame that there's no great value way to book those anymore with points.
It sure is. I had some good stays in Hawaii with that, and that's a thing of the past. All right, next up, Chase refreshes the Sapphire Reserve card. I've complained about this many times in the past that they took a card that offered solid value to frequent travelers and simple. It was simple to explain. That now they made it much more complicated. They introduced a much higher annual fee. They got rid of 3X for all travel. They got rid of 1.5 cents per point for all redemptions through Chase Travel. They loaded on piles of coupons that are in some cases really hard to get value from. And they've had multiple significant issues with the rollout of all these changes. It's been pretty depressing overall.
Yeah, and it didn't really make a lot of sense to us, I don't think. And, I suppose they needed to change something with the economics of the card, but this just didn't seem like a very customer-friendly way to do it at all. It seems really complicated now, and that's a shame. So for all the money that they've spent marketing this, because, I mean, man, I see Sapphire Reserve advertisements everywhere. I was in New York City over the weekend, and I just kept seeing them everywhere. And I thought to myself, with all the money they're spending on all of these advertisements, they probably could have not ruined the cart.
That's a great point.
it's nuts. They're everywhere. They're Grand Central, I mean, it's Times Square, everywhere I saw ads for the Sapphire Reserve, and I was like, my goodness, all that money. Jeez. Anyway, I wasn't particularly impressed with that, either the fact that it happened or the way that they're spending their marketing money. But who am I? All right, next up, Chase wanted to make sure that they had a good shot here. They wanted to increase their odds and get in the top 10 list twice. As we mentioned earlier, Chase has edited the edit at the last minute, just in time to get in for this. They've edited the edit to have many hotels less than the 2X points boost that we expected at the beginning. So now it looks like a lot of places are maybe 1.65 cents per point. And maybe that's going to vary. I assume it's going to vary. At this point, I would expect that it's going to vary, and some will be a decent value and some won't. That's really a shame. It's a shame that A, it happened. B, that there was no advance notice. See, that they tried to pretend like that was the plan all along.
Right.
Nothing suggested that. And like when people called them out on it, they were like, oh, well, some of our marketing materials didn't get updated. Yeah, right. Like it wasn't planned to be that way in the beginning. It had to be updated because it was never announced to be an up to 2X. Yeah. You're right, Chase. You're right.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny that Chase didn't think the Sapphire Reserve was enough of a problem to get into the Bonvoid Awards that they had to make this last minute entry. Moving away from Chase briefly, we have Hilton. So Hilton was one of our favorites last year for not for the Bonvoid Awards, but for the Deal of the Year Awards because they did such a great job incorporating small luxury hotels of the world into their program, and it offered such great value. And Hilton, took a step back and said, "Oh yeah, right. That is such great value. We've got to do something about that." So, before all this started, the top most expensive standard rooms booked with hotel points were 150,000 points per night, and then this year we saw it jump to 200,000 points. And then shortly after that, it jumped again to 250,000 points. And there's no clear message that that has necessarily stopped. So, thanks, Hilton, for raising point prices over and over.
Or that it will stop. When you say that the top price was 150, it was only a few years ago the top price was
It's
95,
true.
and then there were a couple places that were 120, and then the 150 was basically just the Waldorf Astoria Maldives, I think, for a while. It was the only place I think that was 150 for quite a while. So when we say that the top was 150, that was like a really outlier situation, and now it's not a really outlier situation. There's a bunch of places that are charging these ridiculous prices that are way more. So when you look at it versus the 95K top tier price just a couple of years ago, this is a huge deval.
I should mention too that it's not just the top prices that went up, but prices in general seem to have gone up in such that our calculated reasonable redemption value, the median value you get for your points, decreased. It used to be, if you go back a few years, we were close to half a cent per point value on average. Now we're around, if I remember right, around 0.4. So it's gone down pretty significantly, the value over time.
20% or so. Which is disappointing. So bummer there. I mean, I guess your free night certificate feels by some measure more valuable than ever because you can use it to replace, rather than using 250,000 points. But on the flip side, the points that you want to use alongside that are buying less and less room, it seems.
I do want to, since you brought that up, a bright spot there is that probably award availability for those free night certificates has probably improved because how many people can afford 250,000 points per night, but you could use your free night certificate for those properties. So I have to give kudos to Hilton for at least keeping the uncapped nature of their free night certificates. That's good.
Agreed. Because then they are useful in situations where you look at it and say, well, even if I had the points, I don't want to pay the points for that. It's useful to have a free night certificate in that situation. All right, number six, the U.S. Bank has nerfed the Altitude Reserve card. So this is just recent, just finally changed a few days ago. Earlier this week, the U.S. Bank Altitude Reserve card now has a bunch of limitations. So first of all, this is a card that earns 3x on mobile wallet. So you earn 3x everywhere you tap to pay with like Apple Pay or Google Pay or Samsung Pay. You can use your smartwatch to pay or whatever it might be. And so that's something I've been using all over the place. And that was an uncapped 3x anywhere you used it like that. Now it's only on up to $5,000 in purchases per month. That's probably enough for a lot of people. But unfortunately, that's not the only way they nerfed it. They also were very popular for the real-time mobile rewards redemption, where you could pay for travel and get a text message to redeem points for 1.5 cents per point. That's no longer an option. So the best option now is redeeming points for 1 cent each for a deposit into your U.S. Bank checking account. So that's a big bummer. And they said that we would have access to transfer partners when this change happened. And that hasn't happened yet. It's like a coming soon thing still now, even though they announced the fact that this was all going to change months in advance. Apparently, they didn't have their transfer points program ready yet, despite all the advance notice. So you can earn 3 points per dollar. They're only going to be worth 3 cents right now, unfortunately. And maybe they will transfer to partners at some point. I hope they don't make me regret not using my points at 1.5 cents per point before this change happened. If they don't launch transfer partners, I'll be pretty unhappy.
All right. Speaking of U.S. Bank, They had come out with a card, the Smartly card, that offered up to 4% cash back for all your spend. And less than a year after launch, they nerfed that. So they put limits on how much 4% earnings you can get. They changed the ways in which you can qualify for 4% earnings. And so basically, they took what was a pretty incredible opportunity and made it it's can be useful for some, but it's just not that exciting anymore of a card. And that was all from launch to nerf in less than a year.
Yeah, surprising there that it happened so quickly, but also not that surprising that 4% didn't last forever, if you ask anybody who thought hard about that. I'm not really sure how that got through the the draft room and into production, so to speak. I don't know how nobody stopped that at US
Right.
Bank. I was like, whoa, wait, guys, you're getting crazy here. Slow down.
Unbelievable that nobody said, can we afford uncapped 4% earnings?
Nobody at US Bank was like, wait, this might not be a good idea. Like, huh? Come on now. Who knows? Maybe there was somebody. Maybe there was that one guy or girl who was like, wait, whoa, hold on. And nobody wanted to listen to him.
Right,
And they
right,
probably
right.
should have. Anyway, so that's that. Next up on the list here. So if you've been paying attention so far out of this top 10 list, there's been two entries so far by Chase, two entries by US Bank. So, I mean, that's 4 out of 10, or a 40% chance it's going to be Chase or US Bank. But let's up it a little bit. Let's add another Chase entry right now and get Chase in here again, because Chase has stopped the ink train. And by that, I mean that Chase ink cards now have lifetime language on them, indicating that you may not be eligible for the bonus if you've had the card before. And they also limited referrals now to just people who are new to ink cards, I believe, or new to Chase business cards overall. I can't recall actually off the top of my head right now. But at any rate, for a long time, it was possible to get a Chase Ink card sort of repeatedly. You needed to wait about 30 days in between, and you can get another one again. And they've stopped that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a major source for ultimate rewards points for probably a small set of hobbyists, but some people just kept doing it over and over and over, and kept getting those welcome offers, kept and before they changed the referral bonuses, would refer like player two, and player two refer them. And so you could be getting around, depending on what the offers were, up to around 140,000 points for every new card between you and the person referring you. And by doing it over and over, that was a great deal, but that's gone now.
And to be clear, we've probably at some point on the show before mentioned that the ink cards don't have the same, or didn't have the same type of restrictions that many of the consumer cards did. That many of the consumer cards say you're only eligible for the bonus once every 24 months or something like that, but that didn't
Or
exist
48
in
months,
the
yeah.
ink cards, or 48 months, depending on the type of card and the restrictions. So that's the train that got stopped, is
Yeah,
that
yeah. They also added
now you
family
can't do that.
language. So if you have one of the no-fee ink cards, you can't get the other, or whatever. They've made it much tougher to get all those welcome offers that you could get before. All right, next up, Mesa. This is one. It was not on our Bonvoid of the Year list 2 weeks ago, but they came out of nowhere and said, you know that Mesa homeowners card? It's gone. If you've been enjoying your card and earning points, too bad. We're shutting down your card account. They seem to have just closed up shop completely, abruptly. And yeah, that's the Mesa story, and they're gone.
Yeah, came out of nowhere. Surprising and disappointing.
Yeah.
All right, and number 10, the last one up on our Bonvoid lists, has to be what I think everybody assumed this would be the front runner from the beginning of the year, and surprisingly got pushed all the way down to number 10 on the list, although this list is not necessarily in the order of our choosing,
No, not
just
at
the
all.
order it ended up in. But number 10 is Southwest Airlines. I mean, did you forget that Southwest totally destroyed everything you thought you knew and loved about Southwest earlier this year? Because if you did, remember that after saying that bags would fly free forever, Chase, or rather, not Chase, I'm sorry, Southwest began charging for checked bags this year, decreased point earnings on paid flights. They added a whole bunch of customer unfriendly things, like the expiration is back on travel credits. They didn't expire forever for the last couple of years. They wouldn't expire, but now they expire again after a year, after 6 months, if it's a basic economy booking. They've increased the annual fee on some of the credit cards. They've decreased the benefits in some cases, or arguably anyway, decreased benefits on, for instance, the priority card. And so this was a litany of changes that I think if you knew and loved Southwest for years, as I did, were really painful. That came in like May, and I think everybody assumed would be the highlight of the, or the low light of the year, I suppose, in terms of the Bonvoy awards. But they did end up getting some stiff competition.
They sure did. I thought they had it locked and loaded for sure. And now it's, you know, I didn't decide before the show who I was going to pick as the winner. I was going to wait till we've talked through the candidates and make my decision on the spot, which is what I'm going to do right after Nick announces his pick for Bonvoy of the year. Who'd you pick?
Well, so, you know, that's interesting. It was a tough one for me because I think my heart was broken by the Wyndham split with Vacasa, but it's not one that necessarily affected me that much. And it's probably not that broad. So even though I there's definitely a part of me that felt super disappointed, I think irrationally disappointed about that change, really. But I couldn't pick that as number one. Chase has made a hard case to get in here one way or another. I mean, as we already said, what they've got, 40%, 30%, 30% of the entries here are Chase entries. And I think the changes to the Sapphire Reserve are so broadly bad that it's become something that, like you said, we can't recommend that card for most people now. You got to be like deep in the hobby to get into it. So it ruined the ability to recommend a really easy card when somebody, I mean, we frequently get the question, or at least I feel like I do. I shouldn't say frequently, but if somebody asks me a question in a like a ordinary social situation where I'm just hanging out with people, if somebody asks me a question about credit cards, it's always, which is the best card to get?
Right.
Which card should I get right now? Right. And that was a relatively easy answer for a segment of people, and it isn't anymore. And that really stinks. And so that's probably the most broadly applicable of these, but I still have to stick with Southwest on this as my main pick, because I have been a Southwest loyalist for years and years. We primarily, almost exclusively, fly Southwest domestically, and there were a lot of things that we appreciated about the Southwest experience. Most of them are gone now, and that really stinks. And by having the Southwest Priority Card, truthfully, it sort of makes up for a lot of those things, but it's not free. It costs us something. It costs us more now than it did before, and comes with arguably less in benefits, in the sense that it's harder to justify unless you're willing to pay for all of the things that Southwest now wants to charge you for. And I wasn't. That's why I was flying Southwest, because I didn't want to pay for those things. So I'm pretty annoyed. I'm pretty annoyed because it really ruined, I think, the culture and the type of company that Southwest was, and all the things that we appreciated about it. And so that's, to me, that's a huge bummer, because it not only makes the program worse and makes the airline worse, but it ruined something that we really enjoyed. So, and I think ruined something that was competitively different. And sometimes people root for the different entity to lose, to fail for one reason or another. I always think that that's ridiculous, because you want more competition. I want people doing something different than everyone else, so that it maintains some pressure on all of the others in the industry to do something positive too, or something that, you know, that might be different. So I'm really disappointed that Southwest has become more alike all of the other major airlines in the U.S., because there's less reason for those other airlines to compete on things like free bags or free seat selection or that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm bummed. So I'm gonna maintain Southwest at the top of the list, though I think that there are strong arguments for some of the others.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So for me, yeah, when all the Southwest stuff happened, I thought they had this absolutely locked up. You know, just by itself, the endless ads for like, we'll have free check bags forever kind of thing. And for them to just go back on that without any, you know, without any apology even, was just so egregious. And But you know, as I think about it in the big picture, lots of Southwest loyalists probably have Southwest credit cards that give them a free checked bag. So the loss of free checked bags for everyone is probably not as widely felt in real life as the perception of how negative that is. That's just an assumption I have on it. But the fact that they added in those really customer unfriendly expirations for the change fees and all that just made them like go from this airline that had so much stuff for free, it was very customer friendly, to really penny pinching. And so they have such a strong candidacy here. But as Nick said, until recently, the answer when I was asked by people who had relatively high means that traveled a lot, what credit card should they get? My answer was Chase Sapphire Reserve. You'll get, you'll earn 3x for all your travel. All of that travel spend will have best in class travel protections, which that part hasn't changed. And you'll be able to redeem your points for good value because at the time you could get at least 1.5 cents per point value when booking travel through Chase. So it was really, really easy to recommend to anyone who didn't already know the points and miles game really well. And now they've made it, they've complexified it. So yeah, it's possible to get good value, but it's really complicated how to go about doing that. You've got to figure out how to use the coupons. You've got to make sure to use it for, use the card to pay for flights and hotels, but not necessarily other travel unless you book that travel through Chase Travel. And to get good value for your points, you have to either transfer your points or you've got to book through Chase Travel when a points boost is available, but they're not guaranteed to always be available. In fact, they're usually not when you actually want them. So it's just so depressing, the whole situation. They took just a very, very solid frequent traveler card and made it into a complicated mess. So that's my pick for Bonvoid of the Year.
It's a strong candidate. I mean, I can't lie, it's a strong candidate. And you could really lump the edits into that and say, well, they were in there twice with the same card, essentially. And so, I mean, it definitely is a strong candidate, especially also, we didn't even really mention the increase in the annual fee. I mean, we did, but we kind of glossed over that. But when you look at the increase in the fee on top of the complexity of it, it's just fewer and fewer people that you could recommend that to, right? Because you need somebody who's A, willing to spend that much on a credit card, and then B, also wants the headache of tracking all of the little things. If they're new to the hobby, are they going to remember that there's a StubHub credit or this or that? I mean, it starts to get really complicated. So I think that's a good pick. It's probably a pretty widely applicable pick. And I think it's worth mentioning that I think I speak for both of us when I say that neither of us were making a lot of redemptions at 1.5 cents per point personally. It's not that I'm all that up in arms over my inability to redeem for travel at 1.5 cents per point, because I wasn't doing that. I was transferring to partners anyway, which we still can do. But I think for the vast majority of people, it makes it way more complicated because they need to learn all of those things on top of learning all of the coupons. It's not a place to start anymore. It's a place to maybe end up if you're willing to accept a lot of complexity. And the loss of 3x on all travel didn't seem to bother me much at the beginning, but then I was just recently in Europe and I was buying train tickets and I was like doing different things like that where I just kept having to spend a little bit here and there on travel and kept thinking to myself, Sapphire Reserve, and then thinking to myself, oh no, not the Sapphire Reserve anymore. And that's really annoying and bothersome. So I think that's also a strong pick. I'll be curious to hear what listeners have to say about this. What's your pick for Bonvoid of the Year? Because I think it's a pretty tight race. I think the expiration on the travel credits on Southwest, like Greg said, makes them a strong candidate, but maybe it's not as broadly applicable as the Sapphire Reserve. I think that probably depends on where you stand. But I'll be curious to hear what readers say. And I think also neither of us mentioned this when we were analyzing here, but I mean, what happened with Mesa, it was awful. And we did talk about that kind of quickly because we recently had a coffee break all about it. But like, I mean, just abruptly closing everybody's accounts and basically making their points worthless. Like, I mean, that's awful. It's a smaller segment of people. And I think that's probably why both of us were more drawn towards Southwest and Chase. And those were things that were more applicable to us, I think. Neither one of us had the Mesa card. But I could totally see, if I were a Mesa card holder, I think that would probably be my pick
Yeah, no,
for
totally.
Bucks.
Yeah, I think the difference in a way is that both the Southwest and Chase situations are, they're such big players in the loyalty space that anything they do has really big consequences across the country. And Mesa, it was probably the worst thing that happened to customers, but it happened to such a small number of people because it wasn't even widely rolled out. Lots of people had been stuck on a waiting list forever and never even got the card, and they're probably happy now that they didn't. So yeah, anyway, that's where that is. We will on the blog, go to frequentmiler.com. We will post the People's Choice Awards voting there, and you'll be able to vote for your pick for Bonvoid of the Year. And so we will later announce the winner, the People's Choice winner, as a separate thing.
Very good. All right, this week's question of the week. That brings us to the question of the week. For this week's question, this one comes in via our Frequent Miler Insiders Facebook group. And I brought this one up both because I thought the question was decent and because there were a number of responses in Frequent Miler Insiders. So I'll be curious to hear yours, but then I will also share some of the answers from other folks in our Facebook group. So Brandon in our group writes, any last minute ideas on how to use a couple of Hilton Resort credits? So, you know, of course, there are a few different Hilton cards that have either semi-annual or quarterly credits. You got the Hilton Aspire card that has $200 Hilton Resort credit twice a year, once January to June and once July to December. And then you have the Hilton Business card that has a $60 quarterly credit. You have the Amex Business Platinum cards that have a $50 quarterly credit. And I guess the Surpass card has a $50 quarterly credit too. So there's a bunch of different cards that have Hilton credits. So Brandon wants to know any last minute ideas on how to use a couple of these Hilton credits before the year ends. I'd rather apply them to a future stay, but from the Waldorf Astoria Cabo to the Conrad Tokyo, everyone seems to be shutting me down. In other words, saying no, that he can't pay or prepay towards a future stay. Any creative hacks? I'm all ears. Thanks. So do you have any suggestions for what to do if you're in that situation? Because I bet there's more than a few listeners out there who have a Hilton credit on one card or another, since there are so many of them now that have Hilton credits. What can they do?
Yeah. One thing you can do is find Hilton properties that charge you a deposit fee right up front. So there are some, like, for example, some properties in Vegas, like if you make your booking now for next year, you'll be charged that deposit fee up front and it'll count as a Hilton stay. And so you should get your credit. The another thing, a lot of people have found that inside, when a restaurant is in a Hilton property, this doesn't work 100% of the time, but it often works that charging your card at one of those restaurants, like go get drinks or get a meal, that
Or maybe a Starbucks gift card
I was going to say,
in some
if there's a
cases.
Starbucks in the hotel, get a Starbucks gift card. All those things sometimes do credit as well. So that's probably my number one suggestion for a last minute way to use those credits.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, those are definitely good ways. And again, the restaurant and Starbucks within a Hilton thing doesn't work everywhere, so you're going to want to do some research online and see which ones have been reported as those that actually working. And like Greg said, most of the Las Vegas properties will charge you a one night deposit. So the trick there is to find a night that's expensive or cheap enough to be about the amount that you're hoping to be credited. So you may need to hunt around for a date that fits for your particular need. And then a number of readers responded with specific properties where they were able to contact the property and make a deposit in advance. Now, a couple things to know here. A prepaid hotel rate on the Hilton website is not going to trigger these. So that's not what we're talking about when we say making. Well, let me back up. Some properties charge a deposit, which is what we were just talking about a second ago. Like if you go to book one of the properties in Las Vegas, they'll charge for the first night of your reservation. And that should work in most cases. If you pick an advanced purchase rate where you're paying the entire thing up front, that usually won't trigger these credits. So you don't want to do that necessarily. Then beyond that, in some cases, you can reach out to the individual property. So if you make a reservation for next year, and this is what Brendan was talking about when he mentioned the Waldorf Astoria Cabo and Conrad Tokyo, those places were not willing to do this, but many places will be willing if you reach out to the hotel itself, maybe the finance department, or somebody at the front desk, manager, et cetera, and say, hey, listen, I have this stay booked for next year. I would like to make a deposit towards my stay now. There are many places that can send you a link to do that online. Now, not everywhere is going to do it. The super popular properties like the Waldorf Astoria Cabo and the Conrad Tokyo are probably aware that a lot of people are using their credits this way and don't want to make that easy. So there are definitely places, I think your most super popular places are not going to probably allow that. But there were a number of people who responded in the Facebook group with other properties where it did work. So it's worth trying if you've got plans somewhere to do that. Some people said that it had to be within a certain amount of time before the reservation, like 21 days, some places. But there are quite a few that they say that they were able to receive it that way. Yeah, so the other thing that, obvious, well, first, an obvious use would be a day use rate might work. So that's another thing that now that won't necessarily work if you're going to be next year visiting and if they won't take a deposit on that. But that's another thing you could try is a day use rate. Hilton makes day use rates really easy to book online. So you can just pick the same check in and check out date, and they'll automatically recognize that. Along the same lines, somebody else mentioned in the comments that they were, unable to make a deposit towards the room at a, I think it was maybe the Waldorf Astoria in Cabo. And instead, that's the data point I was just thinking of. Instead, they called the spa and they were able to buy a gift card for the spa because they were going to use the spa anyway. And they were able to split that $200 on one card and $50 on another card, and it successfully triggered the credit. Now, I wouldn't necessarily count on that working everywhere. I wouldn't do that somewhere where I wasn't planning to use the spa anyway, in case A, it doesn't credit, and B, of course, you're going to be stuck using that for the spa if you do that. But they were able to do that in advance, do that over the phone or via a link, I suppose. So that's another potential option. And then finally, what might work is some sort of a day access type of a situation. Now, we've heard from some readers before who've been able to eat at a restaurant on site and open some sort of a folio at the front desk to be able to charge to that. And then it sort of looks like a charge from the front desk instead of a charge from the restaurant. We've heard from many people who said they weren't able to do that. Nobody knew what they were talking about. But we've heard from some folks who've been able to do that by going to the front desk first. So that's another thing you could try. If you have a place somewhere near you that you're going to be able to eat dinner at anyway. So those are some ideas for how to use that for future stays. I think between all of those things, probably one of those ought to work, if not multiple of them. So hopefully that helps give you some ideas, Brendan, and everyone else out there. And I thought it was a good question, and there were some good responses in the Facebook group. Always a good place for that type of question, which I should add to that. It's always a good place for that type of question. Sometimes we'll hear from people who say that they asked a phone representative if A will work or B will work or C will work. And oftentimes phone reps don't know, or they'll make something up, or they'll tell you what they think is the right answer. But when you check, like in our Facebook group, you're frequently going to hear from people who've actually done it and have direct experience with it. So it's always a good place for that sort of question in general. All right. Unfortunately, that's the end of today's episode. If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to get more of this stuff in your email inbox each day or each week, you can go to frequentmiler.com/subscribe to join our email list. Follow us on all the various social media, wherever you're watching or listening. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up, a like, leave us a comment, give us your feedback and your pick for Bonvoy of the Year 2025. And if you have a question that you'd like to be considered for a future question of the week, or a piece of feedback that you'd like to be considered for the giant mailbag, you can send that too.
Send it to mailbag@frequentmiler.com. Bye, everybody.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights, and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at VoiceScape.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.